Hello and welcome to Chicago Business Podcast, Episode 6. I am your host, Drew Sekula, and thank you for joining. Today we welcome Anthony Algman from Algman Data Leadership. Anthony is a nationally recognized speaker and author on the topic of data leadership, and so we had a good discussion. Excited to share it with you today. I hope you enjoy. And if you do, please like and follow to stay connected to Chicago Business Podcast. On with the show. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Chicago Business Podcast. I am Drew Sekula, your host, and today we welcome Anthony J. Algman. Anthony runs his own firm. He is the CEO and founder of Algman Data Leadership, where he is a nationally recognized thought leader on the subject of data. Anthony's experience has included executive roles, as well as a consultant, a speaker, an author, and is also a podcast host. So welcome to Chicago Business Podcast, Anthony, and great to have you here.
Thanks, Drew. It's great to be here.
Nice. So, as with other episodes, we'd like to include an icebreaker. And I have not always done a great job of leading with it, but today we're going to. So,
why not?
Why not? Exactly. It's a nice day out there. First, I think it might be the first day in the 70s here in Chicago. And, we might as well celebrate with a little beverage. So we do like to do the beverage of the day. And today we decided to go with, well, why don't you go ahead? It was your selection.
Right. So I have chosen some Jack Daniels, some Gentleman Jack Daniels to celebrate. And the reason is I one time, and this had to be probably 10 years ago, I had the privilege of going to the Jack Daniels distillery in Tennessee, and I was always fascinated by the process by which they make whiskey at all. It was the only distillery I'd ever been to. But the fact that Jack Daniels said, you know what, let's run this through some charcoal and see what happens and see what comes out of it. And they remove these impurities using charcoal, and then they sell the charcoal for people to grill with. And I just always found that to be unique and interesting and fun, because there's kind of a parallel to what we do with data is you know, you take these inputs for whatever they are. They have spring water and they have, you know, barrels, and they do their stuff to distill the actual alcohol. But then it's a matter of saying, okay, well, what else can we do with this that may not be obvious, that other people may not be doing? And how do we create something as a competitive advantage for what we are trying to sell? And that's what Jack Daniels does. And so I've always enjoyed it. I like the taste too, but it's always been that story that stuck with me. And I've always kind of had an enjoyment of that ever since we went to that distillery a long time ago.
Nice. That was before the whiskeys got so popular too, I think, right? Mm-hmm. They've really come into their age here with all of the boutique. I don't know. Some have been around forever, obviously, but then, but it's really caught on here recently. I'm a more of a newbie to the whiskey scene, and but I've learned a little. You know, picked up a few bottles of scotch here and there, and also bourbon. So. With your Gentleman Jack, I wasn't able to match exactly. Of course, we're not too far away from each other, maybe 15 minutes. But given the you know, the times we find ourselves in, of course, we're recording this remotely, and so I had to the closest I could get with what I had in the cabinet is not too far away. Actually, it's a Kirkland Signature brand. I'm a Costco guy, too much so. And it's their 7-year bourbon. Very interesting, though. This is actually distilled and bottled in Tennessee as well. So, you know, I don't know much, but I know enough that it can get a little bit confusing with the, you know, with the whiskeys. Obviously, the bourbon is a subset of whiskey being aged in what, new oak barrels, and made from at least 51% corn. And that was one of the big differences with what you have over there in Scotland. But then with, you know, most bourbon, I think, is actually from Kentucky, right? And this is, this Kirkland one is a Tennessee bourbon. But as I understand it, Tennessee whiskey is almost another subset of bourbon, because it has, you know, all of the monikers, I think, of a bourbon, but then adding in some of that charcoal filtration. So anyway, I find it incredibly interesting. I've done most of my exploring of alcohols in the wine, in the wine arena, having lived out in the West Coast for quite some time, over a decade. But I've been really enjoying these some of these bourbons lately. So it'll be a nice little touch as we go through here. So thank you for sharing that. Maybe we can go ahead and get started though with touching on your connection to Chicago. I know you've spent a lot of time here. I'm not sure where it all started. So if you can walk us through the origin story for yourself, that would be a great place to go.
Yeah, well, I am a Chicagoan through and through. I've lived in the Chicago area pretty much, well, actually my entire life. And at this point, I don't see anywhere else ever becoming home. So I think, definitely feel roots, and have worked in the Loop most of my career, even though I've lived in the suburbs most of my life as well. But with data leadership, it's really a pursuit of passion for me, and it's something that I've long been motivated by, trying to cobble together a tool set and use data to make the biggest impact possible for businesses out there. And I've done that in, being a technologist and building data systems. I've done that as a consultant working for other organizations. I've done that as an executive and applying those in a large scale capacity for organizations. But I've never quite felt at home trying to do things with data until I was able to take a step back and say, okay, what have I learned? And after 20 years or so in this broader data management industry, what matters here? What can I do uniquely well? And what are organizations really needing? And I kind of realized that there's a plenty of investment in technology. There's plenty of investment in data systems and data lakes and data this and data that. Fine. And there's a lot of understanding that data is important now. We can do anything. And then you look at your personal life. There's probably a phone within 6 inches of you right now. And in that phone, there is basically all of the information in the world. And that is our standard for our personal lives now. And yet our businesses, While we witness things that look like bad special effects, like Elon Musk's SpaceX landing rockets backwards on barges floating in the ocean, our businesses can't balance two numbers to actually make them equal each other. So they know it's important, but something is breaking down. And what that is this disconnect between the technology systems and the data that we have and what our businesses actually need to do as businesses. And so as I explored that, and as I got further along in my career, and I'd have enough experience where I could see all the different vantage points of that, I realized that my calling, my mission, is to help these organizations put it all together. Because I've been the one building the systems, I've been the one consulting on strategy, I've been the one in the executive chair trying to build this stuff for a team and build up a team and an organizational capability, I realized that it comes not from doing one thing well, it comes from doing a whole bunch of things in tandem with one another, and that's reliant on people communicating and working together across the entire organization or enterprise to use data to improve what we do. And that's really where data leadership comes in, is to say, how do we take all of this data that we are constantly inundated with? We have a device that can get to all the data. How do we take that and do something with it in a way that benefits our businesses? And that's really what my business, my life's work is all about.
Yeah, that sounds very interesting. And a lot of parallels with some of the work that I've done over the course of my career as well with, it sounds like a lot of what you're talking about is getting into kind of a dashboard reporting for business type of information where, interested to hear your perspective on this, but you know, does it really get into really defining those critical, the key performance indicators, and just deciding what information to display where, or is it more than that?
Oh, there's a lot more to it, but that is an important part. So to make information truly valuable, you have to do something different with it. You have to say, okay, we are going to drive more sales, or we're going to reduce our cost basis, or we're going to manage our risk better. Like something business relevant, you have to do better. A key part of that could be things like key performance indicators or reporting or communicating about information. But it goes far much further than that as well, because you have to think about what are our provisions for data security or for data privacy or for data quality. How do we know that what we're trying to do with the data can actually support what those activities based on the underlying merits of the data that we're using? So there's all of this complexity when in reality, our mission's pretty simple. It's saying, hey, let's use some data and get better at what we do. Fine. But really what goes into it is all of these little component pieces, from quality to metadata management to data security to enrichment to KPIs and metrics and measurements to building reports and visualizations to teaching people how to use it. All of this stuff has to happen in tandem, or otherwise you're not going to achieve what you should be achieving with it. And that's really the point, is that you could invest a ton in a data lake. Data lakes are one of my favorite examples right now. A lot of organizations out there have said, data lakes, we're going to put all the data in a place where we can get to it. And that sounds like a great idea. And it probably is a great idea. The problem then ends up being that they put all this effort into putting data in one place, roll it out, and everybody's like, I have no idea what to do with this. I don't know how to find what I'm looking for. I don't know what I can use it for. I don't know whether or not it's actually the information I'm looking. I have no way of validating that I found the right thing, even when I do find the right thing. It's all this complexity because we focus in one area. We really need to be taking a kind of system, end-to-end data lifecycle approach to it all, to say, what are all the things that have to happen to turn data into something that's better as our business? And that's really, you know, what data leadership is all about. So KPIs and metrics, absolutely crucial to that. But one of the things, because I wanted to point out one more thing that tends to be a pattern that we see, is that people think that by using data, it inherently creates value. And while using data is an important step, it's not enough. So just saying, here's some operational reporting with a bunch of insights about your operations, until somebody takes that knowledge and connects it to an improvement in the business, all you've done is buy toys. All you've done is just found something interesting, but not valuable. And that's really what, as data leaders, we need to push through to our organizations and say, okay, it's not enough just to have something interesting. How does it actually translate to real business change?
Okay. Yeah, that, I think I'm starting to get a good handle around what you're talking about there. So what about like the interface then with like chief information officers? I know that in your role, you've been like chief data officer for like Chicago Transit Authority and for different organizations. Can you kind of compare and contrast that role with like a chief information officer role, or is
it's actually quite an interesting comparison, because if you know, for just a level set, a chief information officer is generally the head of your technology organization in most companies. It was created a couple decades ago when the chief technology officer was focused too much on the technology. They said chief information officer needs to be thinking more strategically, needs to be more relevant to the business. What's happened since the chief information officer role had been created, over time, the technology organizations, again, have become less and less strategic. They've been more and more oriented towards keeping the lights on, providing core technology services to organizations, but not really centers of innovation quite the same way. And certainly not thinking about the data from a business context. They're thinking about databases and data systems, but they don't really think about what the implications to the business side. So chief information officer has largely not, in my opinion, fulfilled the obligations of creating a strategically oriented technology group within our most of our companies. They're too focused on the tactical objectives of technology. The chief data officer is an attempt to create that strategic technology and data executive kind of again. Like we tried to do it once with the chief information officer and we botched it because we continue to push the technology groups aside and they were in many cases willing to go aside. And yet now we realize how important data is. We don't want to trust it to the technology groups. We want somebody else who can come in and connect it all. And so the chief data officer is an actual term that I don't care for very much. I actually don't think it's the right way of building out organizations. I think what you need is a strategically relevant CIO and a technology infrastructure that supports the business at every turn. However, from a practical reality standpoint, there's a lot that's been built into our technology groups, and a chief data officer may be necessary to come in and really connect what does data do for the business, liaise with the technology group, but oftentimes report up through maybe the CFO or even the CEO in a lot of cases to be a little bit removed from that technical day-to-day that a CIO tends to get consumed by. So it's not all the CIO's fault, but we have a problem, and it really comes back to this breakdown between our technology organizations and the rest of our businesses, and even this notion of dividing our companies into IT and the business. Really, IT is part of the business. It's not like we weren't around saying finance and the business or marketing and the business. It's really needing to be something that becomes more collective in effort. And data is really this thing that transcends technology, transcends business units. It's the closest thing we have to truth inside our organizations. And we all need to be involved in making the most of it. There's no way around it otherwise. There's too much to do with data to capitalize on data. If we're not all working together as a unified organization, it's gonna be very challenging to be data leaders in the way we need to.
Nice, yeah, I appreciate that explanation. Now, you've written a book, and it's about data leadership. And I was doing a little research, and I didn't find a whole lot of a lot of other books in that area. It's kind of a little bit of a, I guess maybe it's a newer term. So maybe can you talk about data leadership and what that means to you and, you know, to the extent that you haven't already covered.
Yeah, so, and the reason I wrote the book on data leadership is that there weren't books on data leadership. And I found that to be a travesty. I said, why isn't anyone talking about this? We've got a million books on data governance, but that's a relatively small piece of the equation versus what data leadership really entails. And that's where I want data leadership to be a term that is much more widely used, because I think it's the thing that so many organizations are grappling with right now and not able to solve, not realizing that this isn't a technology effort. This isn't left to the data architects. This isn't left to the CIOs. It is really something that needs to pull from a lot of different areas of the business and you know, change how we work if we want our businesses to remain relevant. And that's the key, is that it's about being business leaders with data more than it is about doing data stuff. And that to me is why data leadership should be a term on everybody's mind. And it saddens me today that I'm still the one person who seems to be talking about this. I really feel like this is something that should be top of mind for everybody because it encompasses so much. And it's not being done by anything else. This isn't just an alternate term for something that we should be doing anyway. This is about taking, you know, the closest thing I would say is data management. Data management is everywhere, and it's a lot of the same kinds of techniques and functions that you need to do as part of data leadership. But the thing that data management doesn't have is this call to action. It doesn't root itself in improving the business. It just talks about data. And it's close, but it's not the same thing. And that's where data leadership has to push data activities, data-related functions and activities through to business processes, to change business processes in the end. Otherwise, you can have all the data management in the world and you're not going to make any difference. And really, we should all be thinking about how do we make it a difference in the outcomes of our organization above and beyond the costs of having that effort made. And that I think is one of the most purely, it's a pure capitalist, pure logic application of what we do in our jobs. And this is true whether you're a data person, this is true whether you're a salesperson, this is true whether you're an executive. Do I matter in influencing business outcomes greater than the cost of having me there? And that's true of our people, that's true of our processes, that's true of our technology investments. And that really needs to be how we measure our own success throughout our organizations and use the data to make it happen. So it's kind of putting that all together and realizing that that's all about business strategy, all about business operations. It's all about data, sure, but the data isn't the important part. It's using it all to propel our businesses forward in a meaningful way, because otherwise, and one of the key motivations of doing all of this is that I see great businesses, 100-year-old businesses, that are starting to falter or are faltered completely because of their inability to turn the corner with data. The you know, I go back to when I was in graduate school, even 10, 15 years ago, studying for my MBA at night while I was working during the day. And the classic case studies of things like grocery stores or utilities or taxi cabs or airlines, these are all industries being disrupted massively by data-driven innovators. And those data-driven innovations are taking what businesses thought would be, you know, last for 1,000 years and making them bankrupt very quickly. You know, retailers, think about that. The entire world of retail has evolved because of data. And it's that kind of thinking, you know, it isn't simply wishing, hey, I wish we could be more data-driven. There's a lot that goes into it. And in a lot of ways, the ease of innovative new entrants can be easier for them to come in with a clean slate than to turn a 100-year-old company around to becoming more data-driven. It's a very difficult thing when you have 100,000 employees and billions of dollars of assets that you've acquired over 100 years. It's not a simple process, but it's one that's essential if you want to last.
Okay, so yeah, so do you have examples of companies that have done it particularly well in terms of legacy businesses that have successfully kind of bridged that gap and been successful in this area?
Right. So the first one that comes to mind is actually Walmart. Walmart, people don't realize that Walmart for a long time was the crowning the gold standard of supply chain management, and we're very much driven by analytics. And you know, Amazon comes in now and takes all that that thunder, but Walmart has actually done an exceptional job of pivoting from a traditional, you know, big box mega retailer into one that is heavily data driven. Now, you can argue their online presence isn't as sophisticated as Amazon, but their integration with their physical locations and their online offerings has been pretty tremendous. So they've done a good job of going from a very large physical presence to one that can also play in the virtual space very effectively. And so they're definitely one. But I think that what we're seeing in a lot of the retail environment today, you're seeing a lot of rethinking on how business models are being deployed kind of globally or at least nationally with this kind of hybrid online and physical component. And I think that we're going to see a expansion of that, especially with the current COVID-19 and coronavirus consideration, social distancing and stuff. You're seeing a lot more effort being put in towards collaboration mechanisms online and being able to do virtualization. I think of things like Walgreens or CVS, the amount of investment that they've made to merge their availability of product and their ability to schedule various services at their physical locations while maintaining certain social distancing. Those kinds of things are those investments that they've been making over the last 20 something years have really started to manifest in new kinds of services that have spiked in demand very recently. And I think that those kinds of organizations are doing a very good job of continuing to serve their existing customer base and through their retail and physical channels, while also bringing forward innovative services from a digital perspective that allow them to do things that their competitors really just can't do in a compelling way. And that's where I think you see larger, older organizations that have all of these assets being able to do certain things that new innovative players just wouldn't have the ability to do early on. And so those are kind of strategic differentiators for those big businesses that protect them from these innovative competitors that are all virtual. They'll never be able to compete unless they're able to reach a threshold like Amazon does. But you can't forget, Amazon's been around for a long time. They've started as a bookstore, and they built they invented the cloud to a great extent with their Amazon Web Services that was designed to serve their digital store first and foremost, while also being extensible to others. It was a brilliant move, and it's really been 20 years almost that they've been doing this in a way that has led them to this kind of market domination that they have in the online retail space, especially.
Right. Yeah, both of those companies obviously are some of the stronger players as we at least get through this hopefully shorter term disruption that we've had. We'll see what it looks like on the other side. But perhaps you can talk a little bit about what you're doing in this, in your role now. I know that you're a nationally recognized speaker, and through Dataversity, I think you do a number of engagements. Can you talk a little bit about what your role is now? Because are you going out and talking to these companies? Or are you actually getting engaged to improve the processes?
Right. So there's several different things that I personally do currently. Right. And I have existing clients where we're in the middle of projects that build various data capabilities. That's become more virtual and remote, but it's still a good portion of my day. I think that the training component right now is something that now that we're recording this at a time where things are still definitely not normal, but we're out of that shock and triage, which was like that first 3 to 4 weeks of the lockdown period where nobody could really function or think about anything looking forward. So from a operating during the pandemic perspective, my business relies kind of in part on consulting engagements, which are becoming more remotely oriented right now, but continue on in some capacities. There's a lot of change in the clients in terms of what they're continuing to focus on. So we're helping them, mitigate the storm to the best of our ability. There's also a lot that I do with training. And so I've been focusing a lot on some training initiatives that are online in nature. So now that we've kind of gotten past that immediate triage state of when we first went into this kind of lockdown mode, nobody could really think long term. Nobody was thinking about what skills do my team need to build, and what are the things that we want to be doing as a business. We're now not yet to a normal place, but at least now people are thinking about, okay, what can we do that helps us get ready for when things get back to a little bit more like normal? How can we start to, finally get on top of some of these data problems that we've had, and now we're going to be that much more important, because it's not like we're going to flip a switch back and all of a sudden we're going to get away with a bunch of the bad practices that we used to get away with. Now everything is more important. And I think that's, that can be driven, that's driven by the logistics of the situations. That's also driven by market realities and just cash flow issues. We've got to be very efficient with everything that we have right now. Because the times have changed. And so I'm focusing a lot in my day-to-day on building out training materials, building out things with Dataversity, whereas we would have had a couple conferences recently. Now I'm devoting a lot of time and energy to what are online tools. And one of the things that I'm also doing is a podcast myself. And that's where I found it's really interesting to be able to talk to different folks that are doing, interesting things in their businesses with data or in their careers with data, and tie it all together and say, okay, here's how data plays a role in this interesting entrepreneurial thing or career progression that a person's had. And I learn a lot through that as well. And it's a good way to connect with folks that need to learn things, but maybe don't have the budget right now to go buy conference passes or deep online learning, learning plans and courses and things like that. So I want to give them something to work with to build their knowledge. Because I think right now that's what we should be doing. We should be focusing, how do we give our insights, our abilities to as many people as can use them? I'm far less worried about business planning and you know, trying to make money. You know, it's something about, you know, how do we help people recover from this as quickly as possible? And if I do my part now, hopefully my business will recover when times get better again. But right now it's just about saying, how do I help? And I do data stuff. And there's only so many ways in a pandemic situation that I can apply what I do in a way that really helps people. But some of the training, some of the podcasting, I think that's a good way to do it.
Right. So for people who are interested in checking out your podcast, can you tell us a little bit how to find that?
Absolutely. So Data Leadership Lessons is the name of the podcast. It's available on, you know, all the major podcast platforms. And then we also do, not unlike you, we do a video version of it that we release on YouTube as well. And again, just search for Algman Data Leadership or Data Leadership Lessons. You should be able to find us, no problem.
Great. And of course, I'll post up links and everything. So it'll be real easy for anybody who is viewing this on YouTube, and they'll be able to find it, no problem. So that's great. Is there anything else that's important to know about?
No, I mean, I would just say that the key to data leadership is really about, how do we take the data that we have and create meaningful change in our businesses, and focus on, you know, taking information and creating something different, not just taking information and doing the same thing. You won't get very far. So if you use that as kind of the barometer and just realize that there's a lot that goes into it, but the concept's pretty simple underneath, then I think you can accomplish a lot of things.
Yeah, I think it's just, everybody needs to have that eye towards innovation, right? And continuous improvement and finding ways to get the best information in front of the decision makers. So it sounds like you are doing, making some great strides in enabling that. And so I'd see a lot of value there. So I appreciate you sharing some of your day with us today, and look forward to staying in touch.
Thank you, Drew. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Take care.